And we're happy to be joined now by our NHL insider here on Reach Deep, Chris Johnson. CJ, how's it going?
It's going well, and I'm happy to have Bick on, but I cannot believe Riccio is on vacation on NHL trade deadline.
That's what I'm saying. We've been we had Jeff Merrick on last week, and Jeff just ripped Riccio as well. So it's one of those things, like, you don't take vacations during trade deadline day, but CJ, he's a best man in a wedding, so it was pre-planned, so that's his out. That's his out.
There is some extenuating circumstances then, but I don't know.
Well, how's your day going today? Because this is July 1st or trade deadline. What's busier for you?
Oh, trade deadline for sure. There's just a lot more going on because we're in season. You know, we're reacting to some at times fresh injury situations. You know, I think July 1st, frankly, has become a little bit more orderly because you have that period where teams can speak to free agents. We usually have a fairly good idea of where the top guys are going to land. It just feels a lot more less chaotic than trade deadline. But, you know, I thought it was a good day. I do recall they all kind of blend together, but this was the seventh or eighth one I've done for Sportsnet, and we have had years where you sit around for the first 3 hours and you get maybe only one minor trade or nothing too significant, and then, you know, it's difficult. So I thought there was a pretty steady stream of activity today, and I had a lot of fun up there with Elliot.
I guess draft day you could throw in there as well, because that's a popular day to start making some team building trades as well.
Yeah, and there's tons of rumors flying around because we're all in the same city, right? I mean, you got agents and obviously all the different team executives and reporters all in the same place on the draft. I've actually thought it would make a lot of sense to me to have free agency open basically the day after the draft and have all the top free agents be able to come in and meet with teams and make, you know, even more of a kind of spectacle out of it. Although I think the league's probably concerned about taking some of the spotlight off the young players, the prospects themselves. But the draft is pretty wild, but I really don't think anything matches this, because let's face it. I mean, every time I've been on with you guys, the last 6 weeks or maybe even longer, we've talked trade deadline to some mm-hmm. degree as part of these weekly hits. There's so much buildup. There's so many rumors that go around. And I do think teams change their plans based on things that happen at the last minute. And so there's just such a focus on this kind of day. And fortunately, it lived up to it, I thought, with the amount of activity we saw.
Well, let's unpack some of the things that did and actually didn't happen. One of the things that here in this market we were keeping an eye on was Tyson Barrie and Vancouver Canucks. And what kind of sense do you get of how far these talks went, and what was Toronto trying to do when it came to maneuvering Tyson Barrie out?
Well, I think really what the Leafs' position on this was they wanted to explore the market and see whether they could get a package out that would make it worth their while to move him, you know, versus what they believe he can do to help the team here in the next 6 weeks in the push for the playoffs and potentially beyond that point. Because I think there's a pretty strong mutual understanding here that the Leafs probably aren't going to have the cap space to sign him. And I'm not sure that this is the perfect fit for Tyson Barrie either. And so because this was a year where the Leafs have been wildly inconsistent, they had a very difficult week or two leading into the deadline. They're in a tough division where I don't think management is under the illusion that they're likely to go on a long playoff run this year. I think that they explored the marketplace. And you know, the smoke that billowed above Vancouver on this one the last few days was real in terms of, you know, the teams exploring if the fit was there. I don't think it got too far, if only because they were able to establish that there wasn't a package that would make sense from both ends to make it happen. And you know, look, this is nothing new. The Canucks were interested in Barrie, you know, going back a ways and to the point where he thought he might actually get traded to Vancouver around the draft of last year. So, you know, maybe this will be something that surfaces again in free agency in terms of, you know, Vancouver exploring whether they can bring Tyson in. But I didn't get the feeling it was too close today. And you know, the other teams that were in there, Calgary and Vegas, to name two, I don't feel like it got too close there either. So, you know, it was within the last hour of the deadline, the Leafs were actually able to, Kyle Dubas phoned Tyson Barrie and told him, "You're safe." And I think they had a conversation about what went on and why his name surfaced and all that stuff. And now we move forward with him part of the team for the rest of the season.
And CJ, the Canucks do have some decisions that they're going to have to make on that right side of defense in the offseason with Chris Tanev and Troy Stecher. Those two players are on the team currently, but we'll see what happens in the summer. The big news here in Vancouver, Jacob Markstrom, knee injury. We'll have to see how long he's out for. Speculation is that it's 3 to 4 weeks. Jim Benning wouldn't confirm. He said they'd know more on Wednesday. But when you're looking at that Pacific Division right now, what does this injury do to the Vancouver Canucks compared to some of those other teams in your standing as far as where the Canucks are in that division?
Well, it's a tough one. I mean, you don't want to see any player injured, but just, you know, the year that Jacob Markstrom's had, the way he's performed and how important he's been to putting Vancouver in the position it's in now, you know, it's a blow. And then if it is 3 or 4 weeks, I mean, you're looking there at, you know, anywhere from 21 to 28 days of what's 40 days left in the regular season. So, you know, it's not nothing, but, you know, I don't think it dooms their chances either. You know, I do believe in that small window, there's no reason to think that Thatcher Demko can't come in and give them some quality starts. Louis Domingue had some big starts when he first went to New Jersey this year as well. And so, you know, I think the priority is on making sure that Markstrom is healthy. You know, I don't think you want to get in a situation, especially with a knee injury, where he's in a position where he has to rush back into any degree. And you know, I think it's a significant news item, probably more than anything else, you know, almost anything else that hadn't happened in Canada today, maybe other than some of the big moves made by the Oilers to try to bolster their own run. But, you know, this is a tough situation, but I don't think it's a fatal blow or anything by that standard.
Is this fair to look at as what the goalie market was going to demand? Because we see Lehner get moved, and then was the only reasonable option for the Canucks to look at was a Louis Domingue?
Well, there was no one else like Lehner. You know, I mean, Lehner's almost his own item in this discussion just because, you know, I think he's a bona fide number one goaltender in the league. And so the price there was pretty heavy that was paid. I mean, Vegas gave up its backup, Malcolm Subban, plus a second-round pick, plus a decent prospect in that trade. And you know, given what we've already heard Jim Benning say, you know, after making the Toffoli deal last week, you know, I just don't think that the appetite was there. Not to mention, let's face it, if this is 3 weeks, it's not the end of the world, and you still would have 2 to 3 more weeks on the other end of that before the playoffs. And, you know, I'm not sure you need to introduce a guy like Robin Lehner. So, you know, I think it's a fascinating deal for Vegas, which, you know, is trying to, you know, one of the teams the Canucks are battling in the Pacific Division to make that trade, just because, you know, you got Marc-Andre Fleury there already. You know, I like what it does for them in theory because it gives them a pretty impressive tandem. I think it sets up where they can, you know, give Fleury some more days off down the stretch if needed and split the starts a little bit more evenly. But, you know, it might also be a lot at that position too in terms of balancing everything and making sure everybody's happy with the situation. So, you know, goalies don't move too much at the deadline, impact goalies. And I think, you know, really in Louis Domingue, he's a number three who's pressed into being a number two in the circumstances. Well, Markstrom's out.
I just want to give you a chance to elaborate on Robin Lehner too, because word came late, but the Toronto Maple Leafs got involved in this trade.
Yeah, it's a complex set of maneuverings, but essentially it goes down as a three-team trade with Chicago, Vegas, and Toronto. And what happened, you know, Lehner has a $5 million cap hit this year in salary. You know, Vegas is in a very tight cap situation. So what happened is Chicago sent Lehner to Toronto, retained 50% of Leonard's salary. Toronto then flipped him to Vegas and retained 44% of the 50% remaining, which just means that Vegas is getting him at a very cheap number. You know, for the Leafs had the cap space to do that. The financial compensation, you know, the actual money out the door is not a huge consideration for an organization like the Leafs, the way they're run, and they get a fifth round pick from Vegas for doing that. So kind of a weird maneuver, but for the equivalent of about 190 grand in salary to Robin Lehner, the Leafs bought a fifth round pick. That's kind of the nuts and bolts of it without getting, you know, too bogged down in all the details.
You listen to Reach Deep. We're joined by Chris Johnston, as we are every Monday, NHL Insider. Chris, the Edmonton Oilers made some moves. They picked up some players in Nathan Seau, Ennis, Mike Green last night without giving up one of their big prospects, whether it's Broberg or Bouchard or others. Is this a W for Ken Holland and adding to that roster, but not getting rid of any important prospects here?
I think it is. I mean, and look, it's, you know, he gave up some draft capital, so it's not as though these players were brought in for nothing. But, you know, this is an organization that, you know, really needs to make the playoffs. I think they really need to make a push for it here. And they have some deficiencies among their forward group. So, you know, this was a pretty creative way to get the job done. They didn't have a lot of cap space either with their situation, and they managed to make it all work by, you know, getting rid of Kyle Brodziak's contract, trading Sam Gagne in the deal for Athanasiou. And, you know, in theory, this should work. You know, it's not always easy to integrate three new players into your team structure and in this short a time period. But, you know, I think given Edmonton's roster, it's hard to look at it and feel like they didn't make themselves better in the short term. And I think given how tight the race is, that, you know, it was a good piece of business by Ken Holland.
Calgary does make moves, but do you feel like they did enough?
You know, I'm not sure. You know, Eric Gustafson is a tempting young player. You know, he had 60 points last year as a defenseman. But, you know, there's two ways of looking at that. He had 60 points as a defenseman, and yet a year later, Chicago's willing to trade him for a third-round draft pick, which is what was given up here. I mean, I think he's a fairly high-risk, high-reward type of guy. You know, with some of the injuries that Calgary's weathering on the blue line, I can understand the thinking here to get him and Derek Forbert in a separate trade with L.A. But, you know, I don't know if it'll be enough. And I think what's interesting is, you know, for the last several weeks anyway, the Flames, you know, really were trying to get, you know, another forward to add into their group. I think the fact that Andrew Mangiapane's had a pretty strong last stretch of games here, was the third star of the week named today by the league, you know, gave them some comfort that he's, you know, maybe able to fill in a little higher in the lineup and that they could get by without it. But, you know, it's been kind of a puzzling year at times for the Flames. And, you know, I do think they've addressed some needs here, but I don't know if it'll be enough just because the margins are so slim in this playoff race.
As far as impact moves are concerned, the Carolina Hurricanes made three of them, Trocheck, Vatanen, and Brady Shea. Are they the clear winners of trade deadline day?
I think so. You know, especially, you know, when you're talking about Brady Shea and Trocheck, I mean, these are players both with a couple more years of control already signed for the team. Vatanen's a UFA, he's injured. So he's a little bit more of an X factor because you don't know what version of him you're going to get. It's only a small amount of time to integrate him into the lineup. But, you know, that was a tough loss for Carolina on the weekend, losing Brett Pesce. You know, he's one of their most reliable defensemen. He suffered a significant injury in Toronto. They're already without Dougie Hamilton. You know, they had to make some moves. And you know, I think they've got a really good team. And to me, they just added three very good players without subtracting too much from their lineup. So, you know, I think that they're probably my winners of the deadline. And, you know, it's tough to know where they're going to be at. They didn't go out and get a goalie after losing both their goalies in that crazy game against the Leafs on Saturday night. You know, they like the guys they have in the AHL. Alex Nedeljkovic was the AHL goalie of the year last year. Anton Forsberg, the other goalie they called up, has played NHL games and was a backup for the Chicago Blackhawks. But, you know, I think that there's a bit of an unknown quantity to their team as there is to a lot of teams. And, you know, that Metro division to me is a real beast because, you know, Pittsburgh went out and made moves today. Washington's already very strong. They got Kovalchuk and Brendan Dillon last week. And then you see Carolina making moves like this. I mean, this is a real tough division for any of those teams to come out of.
And on the receiving end of one of those Carolina trades is the Florida Panthers. What do we make of their decisions today? Because, you know, they move Trocheck out and they don't do a lot aside from that to bolster what they are. They're in a playoff push here.
Yeah, it's a little hard to get a read on. You know, I think Trocheck, you know, he hasn't had the best season, you know, by his own admission. It's been tough. He had a significant injury last year, and I don't think he's just been quite the player in terms of his performance that they signed when they extended him and gave him the contract they did. So, you know, I think that they're trying to retool a little bit, make themselves a little more flexible, but it's hard to argue with Eric Holland and Lucas Walmark. And I like Walmark. I think Hall is actually a useful player. We saw him play for the Golden Knights in Vegas when they went to the Cup Final a couple of years ago and was a member of that team. But it's hard to see them as a team that's stronger today in terms of this playoff push that they want to make in these few weeks than they were. Now, that being said, this might be a bit of a jolt to the dressing room. They've been in a particular malaise since coming back from the All-Star break and haven't been able to string very many wins together. So, you know, I think it's a move with probably a little bit the long term in mind. and they feel they're not sacrificing entirely the short term because they did get a couple players they can plug right into their lineup. But, you know, we saw a few teams sort of do similar type of things. I mean, they're probably the most extreme example, but Buffalo sort of bought Wayne Simmonds, if you will, and sold Connor Sherry and Evan Rodriguez. We saw the Rangers make deals with Carolina, you know, Brady Shea, and they're what, 3 points behind them, I believe, in the standing. You know, this is kind of a, I think that the philosophies have changed a little bit league-wide. We've seen more teams that are on the fringes of playoff contention make different type of moves. Everyone doesn't go all in thinking they're one trade away from making it, and I think that's ultimately where Florida is, that they feel that there's a longer process that they have to observe here, even as much as they'd like to end their playoff, brief playoff drought here, this spring.
Yeah, you know, perhaps I framed that incorrectly, not just of, you know, having to make a playoff push, but is there a bigger directive? You know, when I see a move like that, I expected another trade to come, and then I look at it and say, okay, are you trying to do something else other than just wins and losses here?
Well, this is the first year that I recall them being a true cap team. You know, after, you know, making the move they did in the summer, they brought in Anton Stralman in addition to the monster contract that they gave to Sergei Bobrovsky. And I do wonder, and I've sort of heard some rumblings that they, you know, want to have next year a lower payroll, that they probably won't spend right to the cap ceiling next year. So I think it could be part of that as well. Although, you know, it's not like they gave the guy away for free either. So I think, you know, we have to be measured in how we look at it. They got two prospects in addition with the two players. But, you know, if you're in the room, you might be wondering, you know, where's the commitment, you know, what's going on here and all those types of things.
All right, CJ, thank you very much for your contribution today. Okay, it's the busiest day of the year for you, but what are you going to do now to relax?
Well, I have a 4 a.m. wake-up call in the morning. I'm going to Tampa tomorrow to cover a Leafs Lightning game. So there won't be much relaxing.
Way to let loose.
That's fun. I mean, it's great. I'm not complaining about my job, but we're still got the stretch drive of the season, and you know, there's no question once we sort of move beyond the rumor mill for at least a couple weeks, the focus goes on the games, and you know, my job becomes a little bit less stressful, at least on the non-working hours.
Well, great job on the network today, and enjoy a cold one. I'm sure you're going to have one or two maybe before you hit bed.
Well,
right?
I'll make time for one of those.
There we go.
Just because you guys gave me permission, and I know Reach is having one somewhere.
There you go. He's probably having 1 to 10, somewhere in between there. Thanks very much, CJ. Appreciate it.
All right, boys. Talk to you next week.
There he is, Chris Johnson, NHL insider for Sportsnet, talking about why the Tyson Berry deal didn't happen.